Welcome to episode 12 of the Holy Bible, the New Testament, a Bible study series on the Anglican Hour. I'm Father Ron Shibley, rector at St. John Chrysostom Anglican Church, the host parish of the Anglican Internet Church. In episode 12, we begin our discussion of the Gospel of St. Luke. Topics in this episode include the history, authorship, language, intended audience, themes, and highlights of some distinctive features of this unique gospel. The name Luke is an affectionate contraction of the Roman name Lucius, which means found. In Greek, the name is Lucas, L-O-U-K-A-S. Among the earliest traditions of the Church is the identification of St. Luke as a physician, most likely from the region of Antioch, a cosmopolitan city which was then the third largest in the Roman Empire. Based upon St. Paul's reference in Colossians 4:14 to St. Luke as one of the followers who was not, quote, of the circumcision, unquote, the assumption is that he was a Gentile convert to Christianity. This would make St. Luke the only Gentile author of a gospel, assuming one accepts that Mark is John Mark. Early tradition also asserts that St. Luke was a follower of St. Paul during his travels in the period before he wrote his epistles. St. Paul says in 2 Timothy 4:11 that only Luke is with me. Tradition rejects the modern theory that these comments refer to a different Luke. In the Eastern tradition, St. Luke is credited also with being one of the earliest icon painters. In Christian iconography, such as the 18th century Russian Orthodox icon on our slides, the symbol of St. Luke is an ox, based upon Ezekiel's vision from Ezekiel 1:10. As I pointed out in earlier episodes, all four gospel authors are portrayed on the high altar and the tabernacle on the altar at St. Joseph's Villa Chapel using images based upon Ezekiel's vision, with the figures of a man as St. Matthew, an ox as St. Luke, a lion St. Mark, and an eagle for St. John. There are many traditions concerning where St. Luke composed his gospel. These include Antioch, Bithynia, a region in Asia Minor which included Nicaea, Rome, and Achaia, the latter in the Macedonian region of Greece. St. Gregory Nazianzen, also called Gregory Nazianzus, and St. Jerome, the translator of the Bible from Greek into Latin, both believe that St. Luke wrote the book in Achaia. Although the author is not mentioned in the text, the acceptance of St. Luke as the author was widespread by the start of the 3rd century. Among the people or documents which affirmed St. Luke as author were Justin Martyr, who wrote at Rome around 150 AD, the Muratonian Canon, published at Rome between 170 and 190 AD, Irenaeus of Lyon, which was the capital of the Roman region of Gaul in the Rhone Valley southeast of Paris, halfway between Paris and Marseille, and who wrote around 170 or 180 AD, and Tertullian in North Africa around 200 AD. Later, the church historian Eusebius in the 4th century credited it to St. Luke. The date of composition is unknown, and there are competing theories, but the most likely date is between 170 and 85 AD. 70 AD and 85 AD. These dates coincide with the destruction of the temple in 70 AD and the date range attributed to Acts of the Apostles, St. Luke's sequel, if you will, to his gospel. Some scholars believe it could have been written as early as 62 AD. The language of St. Luke's Gospel is the highest literary form of Koine Greek, the most common language spoken in the Mediterranean region at the time of Christ, and the language of most manuscripts of the New Testament. The elegance of St. Luke's Greek and his fluency in its idiom is evidence that St. Luke was an educated man. St. Luke's Gospel is the only Gospel with a dedication or preface, and it is found in chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. In verse 3, the first intended reader is mentioned by name, Most Excellent Theophilus. While Theophilus is the only name mentioned, tradition says that St. Luke intended his book to be instructive for newly converted Gentile Christians anywhere in the Mediterranean basin. Over time, it has been accepted as the most evangelical of the three synoptic Gospels because it is the most comprehensible by people of all nations in all generations. The main theme of St. Luke's Gospel is that the good news or gospel of salvation through Jesus Christ is available to all people. This is demonstrated in the text both near the beginning, in the nativity narrative, and in the closing verses. In the Song of Simeon, known in the church as the Nunc Dimittis, which is a canticle for evening prayer after the New Testament lesson, in the Anglican tradition and for Compline here at St. Chrysostom Parish, Simeon sings of the purpose of St. John's life in chapter 2, verse 32, to be a light to lighten the Gentiles. Further evidence of the theme of salvation for all is found in Jesus' closing remarks to the apostles before he led them to Bethany, where they witnessed his ascension. Jesus says, "Thus it was written, and thus it was necessary, for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead the third day, and that repentance and remission of sins should be preached in his name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem." The phrase, "thus it was written, and thus it was necessary," suggests an inevitability regarding the intentions of God the Father from the beginning of creation, which is a theme explored more extensively in the Gospel of St. Matthew. Other themes of St. Luke's Gospel are the power and necessity of witnessing, meaning the need to stand up for the truth of the Gospels, the power of faith, and the need for a response in faith to negative events in the world. The power of prayer, demonstrated by examples of Jesus himself at prayer in stressful and challenging moments. The theological concept of parallelism, in which moments in the life of Christ may be compared to events in the lives of others, both during Jesus' lifetime and from the Old Testament. For example, parallels between John the Baptist and Jesus. And finally, a major underlying theme running throughout the book, God delivers on his promises. Although St. Luke may have borrowed from the account of St. Mark, his gospel does not follow the same form as either the gospel of St. Matthew or St. Mark. It is neither fully a biography, nor is it a history. St. Luke calls it, in verse 2 of chapter 1, an orderly account, which includes extensive material gathered from other, quote, eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, much of which is not found elsewhere and which gives witness to the teaching of Christian doctrine. Some of the highlights are a genealogy of Jesus, which differs from the one in St. Matthew's account, and is presented in chapter 3 after the account of his baptism. The only discussion of the infancy of St. John the Baptist, the New Testament's only account of the nativity and childhood of Jesus, and an emphasis on the importance of Saint Mary, especially in the context of both obedience and righteousness, or what in modern language is called virtue. Saint Luke's Gospel is the source book for much of the veneration of Mary and for Marian devotions in both the Western and Eastern churches. The Gospel of St. Luke is also known for four complete songs or hymns that are not found elsewhere, discussion of unique events not covered in other Gospels, several unique parables, including some of the best known of the parables, and more references to women than in any other Gospel. Many of these women play significant parts in the narrative, and many of them are mentioned only in St. Luke's account. St. Luke incorporates many questions, such as this by the scribes and Pharisees in chapter 5, verse 21, "Who is this who speaks blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God alone?" And by Herod in chapter 9, verse 9, "Who is this of whom I hear such things?" And in reference to John the Baptist at his birth in 1:66, "What kind of child can this be?" This format is a dramatic device which creates a sense that something even more important is to come. The plan of study in this course of St. Luke's Gospel differs from that used for the Gospels of St. Matthew and St. Mark. I will quote more extensively from the text concerning the many events, parables, quotations, and mentions of names and family stories that are found only in St. Luke's Gospel. I will also focus your attention on the teaching themes and messages which St. Luke offers. I mentioned earlier in this episode that St. Luke wrote in the highest literary form of Koine Greek, but he was also quite skilled in his organization of the narrative. As the noted Bible scholar Luke Timothy Johnson pointed out in The Writings of the New Testament, St. Luke kept attention focused on the principal characters by removing a character from the narrative before introducing another. This technique tends to keep the reader focused on the main storyline, a technique which modern movie producers use when adapting a book for the screen. I will point out frequently where this technique has been employed. The introduction, or preface as it is sometimes called, is perhaps the best example of what the Christian concept of teaching in the apostolic tradition means, that is, passing on received wisdom with faithful adherence to traditional understanding. St. Luke makes it clear that he himself was not an eyewitness, but that he relies upon other, quote, eyewitnesses and ministers of the word. He clearly states his purpose in offering this, quote, narrative of those things which have been fulfilled among us. It is not clear from the text whether Theophilus was taught Christian doctrine by St. Luke himself or by others. If it were others, they must have been one or more of the eyewitnesses and ministers of the word about which St. Luke wrote in 1 verse 2. In verse 3, St. Luke expresses the essence of the concept of apostolic tradition, especially as it relates to passing knowledge along to others. And note the choice of certainty, a virtue which is much frowned upon today. And here is verse 3 of chapter 1. "It seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write to you an orderly account, most excellent Theophilus, that you may know the certainty of those things in which you were instructed." Tradition suggests that Theophilus, of whom there is no record other than the mention of his name here and in Acts of the Apostles, may have been St. Luke's financial backer during the period when eyewitness accounts were collected and the text prepared. We begin our discussion of the text with St. Luke's account of Zacharias and Elizabeth, who are both mentioned in the Gospels of St. Luke and mentioned only in chapter 1. Most Western church scholars speak about the Nativity and the Annunciation accounts as referring only to Gabriel's appearance to St. Mary. But as the Orthodox Study Bible, New Testament, and Psalms points out, there are actually three annunciations in the text. It should also be noted that both annunciations involve births, or the first two annunciations involve births which are to happen under miraculous circumstances. St. Luke's account is rich in detail, all of which illustrates the theological theme of obedience to God's instruction, a virtue which both Mary and Joseph will demonstrate throughout the narrative. As a point of interest for viewers, the virtue of obedience is one of 12 themes in our annual 12 Days of Christmas podcast for the days from Christmas Day to the evening before Epiphany. I mentioned earlier St. Luke's style of removing a character before introducing another. In this instance, Theophilus steps aside not to be mentioned again, and two new characters are introduced in chapter 1, verse 5, Zacharias, the priest of the temple division of Abijah, and his wife Elizabeth, a descendant in the priestly line of Aaron. Both are described as righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blameless, in verse 6. And our graphic on the screen is a portion of a 15th century fresco in Florence, Italy. While St. Luke did not outwardly attempt to link Hebrew tradition to his account as St. Matthew did, the phrase walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord can best be understood in the context of the Hebrew understanding of Psalm 1, the so-called Two Ways Psalm, in which the psalmist wrote of the actions which the righteous person will not do, walk in the counsel of the ungodly, stand in the path of sinners, or sit in the seat of the scornful. Elizabeth is not only blameless, but also barren, and like her husband Zacharias the priest, well advanced in years, making conception unlikely. As St. Luke notes, a woman being barren was regarded in the first century with scorn, or reproach in Bible terms, as Elizabeth herself points out later in verse 25, "Take away my reproach among people." The family relationship between Elizabeth and Mary, and therefore John and Jesus, is not revealed until later in chapter 1, verse 36, "Elizabeth, your relative," and as noted earlier, is spoken of only here in the Gospel of St. Luke. We enter the story on a day in which Zacharias was due to burn incense at the temple's altar of incense, and the angel Gabriel, known in the church as an archangel, came bearing startling news. Gabriel is shown here as he is presented in stained glass at St. Joseph's Villa Chapel. Technically, the blessed news spoken to Elizabeth by the archangel is the first annunciation, and is spoken in the context of the effectiveness of prayer, and, when the pronouncement is fulfilled, another consistent theme of St. Luke's Gospel, that God delivers on His promises. In verses 13 and 14, Gabriel says, "Your prayer has been heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you shall call his name John, and you will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth. Not only that, but said Gabriel in verses 15, 16, and 17, he will be great in the sight of the Lord, and shall drink neither wine nor strong drink. He will also be filled with the Holy Spirit, even from his mother's womb, and he will turn many of the children of Israel to the Lord their God. He will also go before him in the spirit of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for God. The last verse, to make ready a people prepared for God, is one of the reasons St. John the Baptist is called the forerunner and also referred to as the last prophet of the Old Testament. The key word here is disobedient in verse 14. When for his disbelief in the glad tidings which came from God through the archangel Gabriel, Zacharias was made speechless until the birth of the child. In reference to John being born in the spirit of Elijah, that reference is reinforced by Jesus on the day of the Transfiguration, according to St. Mark's account in Mark 9, verse 13. But I say to you that Elijah has also come, and they did to him whatever they wished, as it is written of him. The people of the temple were puzzled by the speechlessness of Zacharias. St. Luke wrote that they assumed Zacharias had experienced a vision. Zacharias returned home after his assignment in the temple was completed and after Elizabeth had conceived a child. St. Luke reports that she hid herself away 5 months and was glad to have regained the respect of those around her, which is the meaning of the phrase in verse 25, "Take away my reproach among people." Next time, in episode 13, we will pick up the narrative when St. Luke sets the account of Zacharias and Elizabeth aside and introduces us to the Virgin Mary with the account of Gabriel's better-known Annunciation and the first two songs in St. Luke's Gospel, the Magnificat and the Benedictus. Thank you for joining me for episode 12 of the Holy Bible, the New Testament. While you're on our new website, I invite you to visit the digital library page for our on-demand podcast and videocast archive, the bookstore page for information about all our publications, and a live link to our e-store at our Podbean site, and more on that in a moment, and the Anglican Hour page, which offers links to our program archive of current and previous series. You can also now watch current and previous episodes of this series on our new YouTube channel, https://www.youtube.com/user/stjohnc. Producing these programs requires both time and money. You can support this internet ministry in two ways. You can make a direct contribution by sending a check in any amount payable to St. Chrysostom Church and send it to our business office address, 7162 Softwind Lane, Mechanicsville, Virginia, 23111. Or you can purchase books from our e-store at our Podbean site, www.stjohnc.podbean.com. Go to the bookstore page where you can order print or electronic versions of any of our publications, 10 at the time of this program, and make payment through PayPal. If you'd like to speak with me personally about this program or any other subject, please call on my church cell phone, 804-306-1190. If you do not reach me, please leave your name, a message, and a callback number. Next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you. Until next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be merciful to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen.